So I just want to share with you two pieces of Rav Hirsch. One of them is a beautiful piece that he puts down the relationship between Torah Shel Peh and Torah Shel Miksav. We spoke about this once before. I don't recall if we did it inside or not. I don't think we did it inside. So Rashi brings from Chazal that you have to put the mishpatim down b'shulchan aruch, like a set table, which means clear, understandable, everybody can, right? So obviously that the psukim here are not a shulchan aruch. There's many details which are left out, pratim, etc. So obviously it, within the nusach, Chazal are telling us that Moshe Rabbeinu was told to give it over with a lot more explanation, background, elaboration, etc. So he gives a mashal on page 288. It's the second page. Beginning of the second, the beginning of the paragraph at the bottom. Torah Shel Miksav is to be to the Torah Shel Peh in relations of a short notes on a full and extensive lecture of any on any scientific subject. For the student who has heard the whole lecture, short notes are quite sufficient to bring afresh to his mind any time the whole subject of the lecture. For him, a word, an added mark of interrogation, an exclamation, a dot, underlining, is quite sufficient to recall to his mind a whole series of thoughts and remarks, etc. Those who had not heard the lecture from the master, such notes would be completely useless. They were to try to reconstruct this idea of these lectures really from the notes. They make many errors. Words, marks, etc. The these scholars who heard the lecture as instructive guiding stars to the wisdom they've been taught. The wisdom of truth which are initiated reproduce from them but do not produce out of them are seen by the uninitiated as being merely a clever, witty play of words and empty dreams without any real foundation. The marshal is gewaldic, right? Like, extra word over here, oh, that Chazamik is Rosh. Like, that's ridiculous. It's a mistake. Torah Shel Baal Peh is in place, and Torah Shel Miksav was a concise version of Torah Shel Baal Peh. And in that, once you know the Torah Shel Baal Peh, the Torah Shel Miksav, an extra word can play a role to bring out a whole thought. But you're right, if I did not know Torah Shel Baal Peh at all, and I'm starting with no background, and say, well, you know, it's an extra word over here. Let's make up that it means X. I hear the challenge, right? You know, like, how do you know that it means that? Now, with that being said, there is the reverse in his system. The Malbim, even more so in his system, says Chazal were consistent in these type of drushes. It wasn't just extra letter here, extra letter there type of thing. You know, I imagine in my note-taking, I'm not going to be perfectly consistent, but I'll be somewhat consistent. I'll get used to it, I'll develop a system. You know, the things are important, I'll underline, I'll put question marks, I'll put, you know, things which are primary, I'll put an A next to them. You know, I'm going to develop a system of how things are going to work, and I'll be fairly consistent, because otherwise I have to keep remembering it each time, what I did. So, Chazal were very consistent. The Malbim is an introduction to Vayikra. You ever went through it? The Malbim has an introduction to Sefer Vayikra. The name of the Joshua is called Yelos HaShachar. The reason why it's called Yelos HaShachar is because if you add up the gematria of Yelos HaShachar, that's the amount of entries he has in the bees. That's a lot of entries. He feels that he figured out the system Chazal use to make their drushes. So again, we don't have a Masara of that system per se. We have various pieces. But he worked backwards to figure out, okay, so why are sometimes the verb before the noun, sometimes the noun before the verb, sometimes the subject at the beginning of the sentence, sometimes the subject getting into the sentence. And he went through all of the drushes Chazal and all of the psukim, and he made a system based on that. Now, the level of genius you need to be able to accomplish that without a computer, with a computer, it would be quite an accomplishment, right? Without a computer, it's like, you know, like, so, and he writes it down. He says, and he gives, then he starts giving examples in places in Shas where Chazal noticed this type of nuance, and they always have the same type of drasha. I just like, I mean, you just have to like be blown away by it. But Hirsch's point is a different point. You know, his point is, okay, we're going to draw the line like this. It's a very clear line. It's always the same line. It's always clear. It's not just pulling something out of their hat. Hirsch's point is, you're starting from a mistaken notion. You thought we're making up new ideas. What we're really doing is taking all known ideas, Tarshish Bal Peh was given, together with Tarshish Miksav. We're not making up new things. We're starting with the realities which exist. And from those realities which exist, we're looking and finding a place you can find in the text. That's how the Rambam says it. Rambam Pirshei Mishnayos in Sukkah, in the third parak, the Gemara goes to a conversation how we know that the Priyetz Odor is referring to an Esrog. The Gemara says, because the word Hadar means Lashon Hador, it lives in the tree. Where there's another type of fruit which stays year to year. Where some Mursa maybe means this. Mursa, what about that? And the Mur goes to a whole list of different lists of things. So Rama says, so what's the conversation over here? Christ says, this is the time of the Amoroyim. So, you know, we have no idea what this pasuk means. We've been, and everybody Christ has been taking different things in the last 1500 years. Also, we said, you know, let's sit down and have a conversation. And once it all fight, decide what exactly is this priates order of the pasuk. That's ridiculous. Obviously, Klaus has been taking an Esrog for the last 1,500 years. Moshe Rabbeinu came down the first year when Klaus did the mitzvah, after Moshe Rabbeinu gave the mitzvah. They didn't say, Moshe, what is this supposed to refer to? I said, I don't know. God didn't tell me. So, Moshe told him what it is. That wasn't so what's the conversation? We know what it is. When it says in the pasuk to put on tefillin, they knew what tefillin looked like. But the question is, can we find some type of, besides being Torah Shema Peh, is there any way to find it in the pasuk itself? That's the conversation of the Gemara that Rambam said. But we're starting from scratch, we have no idea what it is, let's go figure it out, is a misunderstanding of how the relationship. That's the point that Rambam says. But what Hirsch is adding is, you think about it, I ask you, what's more important, the lecture or the notes? The answer is the lecture. Because the lecture is the full statement. The notes are just a vehicle to recall the lecture. So according to Hirsch, Torah Shebaal Peh is much more important than Torah Shebiksav. Because Torah Shebaal Peh is the lecture. Torah Shebiksav is the notes. By establishing the relationship the way he did, he turns the whole thing around. So, you know, he was dealing with, I mean, obviously it was part of his response to the reform of his time, who denied Torah Shebaal Peh. And, you know, the main thing is the Torah Shebiksav, because, and they're saying, everyone, listen, everybody agrees Torah Shebiksav is important, and the Torah Shebaal Peh is debatable, we don't believe in it. He says, not only does he agree, first of all, that it's not debatable, it's important, but it's more than that, it's even, you're backwards. There's nobody in their right mind can figure out what the Torah means, based on the Torah, just what's written in the Torah. We don't have the ability to do that. So, Torah says you should shech like kasher tzivi zicha. Torah says you should put on tefillin. Right? The Torah says you should take a priyetz odor. There's so many things which are ambiguous. So what are you supposed to do? Whatever you want. That's not mistaber. So it means. I think that this piece of Hirsch is like so powerful. So let's go back to the beginning of it. Okay, so the Russian is giving mishpatim. Okay, now, to the unprejudiced mind, nothing can be so secondly from the truth, show the truth of traditional oral law as the first paragraphs with which this Mosaic law-giving starts. So now Moshe Rabbeinu is starting to give over the parasha of mishpatim. The civil and criminal laws of the nation are to be given. The fundamental basis of the ordinance of justice and humaneness are to be laid down. to govern relationships and behavior of man to his fellow man in the state. The first matter to be dealt with deals with the rights of man. When a man sells another man, when a man sells his daughter, what an unthinkable enormity if this written word of the book of the law of the Jewish nation should be the only source of the Jewish concept of rights. That's it, right? We have the six psukim covered out everything there is to say. What a mass of laws and principles of jurisprudence must have already been said and fixed, considered and laid down and explained before the book of law could reach these, or even speak of these, are only quite exceptional cases. Like, you know, listen, you know, encroaching on neighbors' rights, etc. The only thing we need to discuss is what would be if you sell your daughter. Like, that's the only thing left to discuss. Like, everything else, like, you know, like, that's all there is, you know. Everything else, like, do whatever you want. Right? But it's with these sentences, the kinds of which deny and limit the very holiest personal right of man, the right to personal freedom, that the law begins. But it's a quite a different matter if the written word, the book, is not the real source of Jewish concepts of rights. If this source is the traditional law, which was entrusted to the living word, to which his book is only an aid to memory and reference when the doubts arise, etc., etc. So that's the point that he says. So then we understand that it's not a kasha, right? That there's many other things which are discussed. Now, from that vantage point, we could discuss why do we think maybe these would be
the notes.
the beginning of the notes.
Still an odd choice for
round one, right?
Or chapter headings or whatever you want to call them.
Right. So he doesn't address that directly over here, right? But what he does so on the page 289. So when the word of God wants us to realize what are the principles of rights and humaneness which it demands for the respect of the human being, it starts off with the criminal. It takes, for example, the criminal against property, the criminal who in all other states is threatened with a dire punishment to body and freedom, shows us what the treatment of the God's idea of rights is in his state dictates. The Chazal says, is referring to a person who stole. So, and he's sold into slavery for stealing. So, now, he later on, he goes, talks about the, I remember what he says by why he talks about the Kiyim Kriyish is Bitul Alma. But he said, if you want to stress how far we take the concept of rights, then an Eved Ivri has rights. I mean, okay, we're used to such a concept to some extent, but we still believe in it. We still have a society, a system which has incarceration. There is no such thing as incarceration in Torah.
Right.
Right. The closest you have to incarceration is the Eved Ivri. Right, which he sold into servitude, living with a family, them taking care of him, they have responsibilities to him. It's a whole different concept. Like, you know, the Torah is like, what's the word, woke, you know? Right? Like, it's way ahead of the progressives.
Wow.
Right?
I haven't heard that before.
Yeah.
I hope I don't hear it again.
You know, like, we're way ahead already. They still haven't caught up yet, right? They don't put it back in the streets. That's not a solution either. You have to have a solution, right? But the starting point is the rights of a criminal is a Mishum Degazah, right? That's where you start with the side of Mishpatim. There are achrayas to a human being, no matter how far he's went. Now, I was reading a piece from Rabbi Einstetter from Cleveland today. You know, we have a concept in Torah, which is a very difficult concept. And we know the concept that mitzvahs don't affect averus don't affect mitzvahs. So that means the fact that they did one averus, the more says because you did one averus, you ate garlic once, you eat garlic a second time, or whatever, right? Right. The reality is people get, you know, so a person did something really wrong. Right. He really hurt a friend of his tremendously. Lashon hara, guy messed up, the guy's lost his business because of him. Like he says, he's nice bench. He says, time for men. I can't daven. Like, I'm such a low life. How can I daven? That's not how the Torah looks at it. You're very good. You have to do tshuva on it. It's not a reason not to do the next mitzvah. So he says we can imagine a situation where a person flew into a rage and lost control of himself and damaged or killed somebody. He comes to his senses, he's blood on his hands, and he's like totally ripped apart. He says, oh my gosh, it's 10 minutes till tshki, I got to da mincha. Yes, that is the correct answer. It's a wild thought process. He says, you know, like it doesn't mean that you ignore what this is, but the process of living in the Bereshit's world is your responsibilities. You have responsibilities to do. The fact that the Eved did something wrong doesn't absolve him from now doing everything else right.
So that's why you keep him in society. You don't exclude him.
We're correct. So this idea, because he's stolen, that therefore we're going to put him away somewhere else, right, is exactly what you don't want to do. You want to say, okay, what you did wrong, you did wrong. Now, let's make sure that you do everything else right. And we'll work on that too. But like, so you put him within a context where he's going to function. So that's one piece I wanted to share with you. The second piece I wanted to share with you I want to show it to you for two reasons. It's a long piece. It talks about the Isra of Ribbis. There's a piece about the Isra of Ribbis. So the puzzle is loisi loike noshek loisi simuno lov neshek. Okay. The first half of the verse, which is loisi loike noshek, it's in the singular. But loisi simuno lov neshek is in the plural. Here the address is made to the community, to all the members of the community, looking at them as an am, and this idea is still further stressed by the paragogic nun. So there is, if you ever notice in Chumash, there's this nun at the end of some verbs, which seems to be like not necessary. You ever notice that?
I wouldn't know it.
Okay. Elav tishma'un. Elav tishma'u means you should listen to him. Elav tishma'un means you should listen to him. Okay, so what's the nun at, right? Right. So I once asked a expert in Semitic languages, who's considered like one of the biggest Pekim and Dikduk in Hebrew, on this question. My question to him was, I find that the paragogic nun is found much more commonly in Sefer Devarim than any other Sefer. I want to know what's that about. He says he doesn't have an answer for me. Right. Then he says to me, so what is, you know, how do you understand the paragogic nun, this extra nun? So he says, well, if you're familiar with, like, you know, Arabic and all the other languages that he's familiar with, they all have this idea of this it's what's the word he used? It's a device for stressing something. It has no what?
Emphasis.
He had a different word for it. Emphasis, right? So, but I'm not sure how Hirsch is understanding it over here, but Hirsch definitely sees the paragogic nun is a stress. It's stressing something. Lo sisimun alav neshech means you as a community cannot place neshech in him. So why the change? The lender is a yachid. In the beginning of the pasuk, talking about a yachid. Lo sisimun alav neshech, you lend somebody money, don't hound him. You, singular, don't hound him. And don't charge him interest. You, the community, don't charge him interest. Like, what's happening? Thou, the Jewish community, as such, being such, shall not impose any interest on borrowers. For this one can see that at once that the Jewish law does not consider the law of interest from the point of view that there's anything intrinsically wrong in interest itself. It's not antagonistic to the idea of rights, but it's wrong in the sense of it's against the principle of which a Jewish communal life is to be founded. So the ribbis betzim is totally not simple that it should be awesome. I can charge you rent for my car. Charge you rent for my horse. I want to charge you rent for my money. No, you can't do that. Betzim, what is ribbis? Ribbis is rent for the money. Right? Right? So it's not any different than any other type of rent, which all of them are permitted. But punk ribbis is awesome. See, if you tell me ribbis is an evil thing, right? So that it'd be pretty evil to rent out my house also. I have an apartment. Why do you want to rent it out? Just give it out for free. But nobody said that. We have, nobody has a record as of yet. It's satanic, to evil, to lend money, usurious rates, right? Some people charge pretty usurious rates for their apartments. So,
okay. It's like an art show.
What? That's my item, and part of the item is used to produce capital. So what happened by ribbis? This is the same time the Torah came along and said, specifically regards to money, there's an acquire to make sure everybody has money. Items, we'll work it out. You'll rent, you'll pay, etc. But when it comes to the idea that there's capital available, everybody has to have, you have to make sure that you as a community are providing that there's capital available to people. And that's why the Lashon of the Pasuk changes to Lashon Rabbah. The Isser Ribbis is when you see yourself as part of a community. As an individual, of course I have a right to rent out my money. But as a part of a brotherhood, I have to make sure my brothers have their needs. Okay, so the Jewish lender is allowed to consider himself purely as a nosha, as one who, of his own goodwill, places the use of his money for a certain time, as well as somebody else, he'd be allowed to take payment for the temporary loss of his money. This is exactly what he may not do. It's neither entirely his own money that he's lending, nor his decision to lend it entirely a matter of his own goodwill. He has a chiyuv to lend money. So in other words, in a society where you don't have a chiyuv to lend money, But Haguya Bechiv to lend money tells me that you're not really the Baila. His money is to be regarded as belonging also to God. To lend it is a duty. And the borrower is not simply an individual. He is Ami, an integral member of the community of God, of the community which Hashem wants to be built up by the magic power of duty. Okay? When Hashem restored the Egyptian slaves, that means us, to the status of human beings, vested them with the right to own property, set them together into community, not by the force of necessity, but by the command to attend to duty. It's not the relatively poor man who has to search for the rich man, but the richer man who looks around for a neighbor who can make use of his surplus wealth and much more. And much as does the rich man need the poor man, then the poor man needs the rich one. The poor man needs the rich one for support for his material necessity. The rich man finds in him the means of carrying out his highest spiritual and moral calling, to render to God, the tribute of acknowledging that every half penny of our possession is lent to us by God. And that's why we talk about staka. We talk about the havoi is the highest form of staka is havoi. But it's lashon of staka, which means it's not something which is goodwill. Staka means it's righteousness. Okay, so the duty of lending money without interest in the next paragraph is one of the rocks of that granite basis on which Jewish social life rests. Carrying the duty is at the same time one of the great acts of acknowledgement by which God wants our allegiance to him to be sealed by acts of sacrifice in daily life. So now, the less the law against interest clashes with the dictates of our natural sense of what is right, the simple idea of fairness justifies it, the less that wrong there is in demanding interest, the more the prohibition of interest joins the ranks of those laws which, like Shabbos, Shemitah, and Yovel, are to be evidence and reminders that it is God who rules over the world and over Israel. Okay, so all of a sudden, the Bereshit ties the concept of halvah It's a ribbis. Like, what does that have to do with ribbis? Right? And you understand that the person, the Gemara says, the next page, saying, Rabbi Yossi, see how blind are those they who lend an interest. If otherwise one is called godless, one is cut to the quick. These people bring pen and ink, scribes and witnesses, have a document written, signed, and witness stating, so-and-so has denied the God of Israel. The more moment see, right? Lending interest is called being careful for Melokei Yisrael. I mean, I'm not being careful for Melokei, I just want to make money. Well, if you understand that your set of ribbis is not, it's not the problem that it's wrong to make money. It's, you don't understand where you fit in the universe. It's fascinating that, you know, ribbis in this parsha over here is moved away to some extent already from the Dinei Mamonis. It's placed already. You're talking about the Isser of the, you know, there's other Isserim of Nevela, etc. All of a sudden, we're talking about Ribbis. You know, like the answer is because it's not a Dinei Mamonis issue. If you pointed out, Ribbis is found in Yeridea, not in Chashem Mishma. It's a fascinating thing. So you have your Shchita and Treifus and Mepazucholov and Terubis and Pasakum and Vodazora and Ribbis and Nida. Avelis, Neder, it's not a Cheshem Mishpah, it's not a Cheshem Mishpah to get in. It's a din on the person of how to be, to lead a more spiritually clean life. So it's like, it makes the whole concept make sense. So he points it out on the bottom paragraph over here. we read about the Jewish law that there's no way denies the justification of interest in itself, only forbids it out of the principle of Jewish social united life. One can argue that in the modern way of looking at it, money may be considered as a utility object, so one could bring interest on loans under the heading of hiring. Payment for the temporary use of which is a rent for a house, the use of a car, etc. He didn't have cars in those days. Okay. Allowed under Jewish law, probably in a carriage or something. This argument overlooks the fact that in the case of the hired object, so the Gemara said like this, the Gemara said like this. So what's Hakad Pshat? What's Hakad Pshat? What's the cloud, how you define the two? So in English, we have the same word for lending. I lend you my car, I lend you money. I lend you my car, I expect to get back the same car at the end. Right. I lend you money, I expect to get back different money.
Same value, though.
Right, but you, I expect you to spend the money and give me different. If you get back the same money, why'd you bother me? Right? If I lend you eggs, I expect to get back different eggs. Right? Flour, etc. So in halacha, if it's consumed, it's called a halva. And if it's not consumed, it's called a schiris. Because when it's called when it's not consumed, it's my car which you're using. So as long as you're using my car, so I have a right to charge you for it. When I lend you money and you use the money, you spend the money, or you consume the eggs, I'm not using your eggs anymore. They're gone. I owe you money. So it's my money that I owe you. So that's what the Torah put the issur.
It's also on lending food.
Ribbis to rice applies to food as well. If I would lend you five eggs, I'm going to ask to get back six eggs if you just the rice.
Really?
Could be told you don't end up have the shavuot is worth, but same. But nowadays, an egg is a shavuot. Right. So the more says the chiluk is milvul hitzon. Anytime it's the difference in halacha to the. Almost perfectly, you know, everything has exceptions. So he's saying, the way he's teaching, it's not just, you know, a halachic vehicle to divide between the two. It lends a logic to the whole thing. Because as long as it's mine, so the Russian did allow me to have ownership in something. And I have a right to use it to capitalize it. So I'm doing that. If it's usurious, it's over, you know, the Ari Moore talked about, you know, there's this is right now, I'm overcharging, etc. We'll figure that out. Otherwise, that's what I'm allowed to do. As much as I had the money, and my chiyuv is to make the money available to you, that you should have the money, so I gave it to you. And you what you have now is just a chayv moment to me. So what, meanwhile, I'm not making money, you are making money, whatever. Was that's not mine anymore. That's out of my purview. So that's what makes sense. The Torah said, that's where the Torah put the iser of asking for an increase in the return. In Parshas Bahar, he adds a knach. He says, the Torah writes a lashon, Geres Hashav v'chayimoch. There's a chiyuv to make sure that the ger and the Torah live. And the next pasuk says, don't charge rivers v'chayimoch. So he says, what's the difference in the word v'chayimoch and v'chayimoch? So the difference is smuchim. That the word v'chayimoch, and they should live with you. So you have a responsibility to take care of them, make sure that they should live. V'chayimoch means v'chayim shel. The life of your brother is with you. He says, what does that mean? When I go out to work and I earn money, I have to understand that part of the money I'm getting for somebody else. That applies to my brother. The Russian gave part of my money that I should share with my brother. So v'chayim shel chichim, as I'm working, I'm taking the life of my brother with me. The ger and tosha, I don't have that responsibility. When they come and they have a need, I have a chiyuv to make sure that I should take care of them and give them what to live on. But the achi, if there's a chiyuv v'chayim chichimoch, v'chayim chichimoch, it tells me that I live with his life as part of it by my thought process. So that money that I got, the reason why I'm not charging it, because I'm giving it to him, it actually becomes his, because that's what was supposed to happen. So then so where am I charging ribbons? It's not mine, and it's supposed to be his anyway. Whereas the car remained mine the whole time. So I'm charging you. That indicates the fact that it was supposed to be mine. So I have a right to charge you. So I think the way he puts it down is a beautiful. I tell you, when I spoke downtown a few weeks ago, spoke about Tashkis. That's the topic this Sunday morning. So I spoke for a big time about it. Besides doing it over here, I figured I could get mileage to do it over there a little bit also. Obviously, it was a little bit different angle. So one of the explanations of this for Baltashkas, I presented different ways of understanding this for Baltashkas. One of the explanations which the Rishonim touch on is the idea of spending frivolously, wasting money. That's Baltashkas. And then, okay, define frivolous, what's called frivolous. That's going to be very, very debatable, right? But I'm saying, so one of the people asked, it's not wasting any money because it's going from the purchaser to the seller.
Huh.
So it's not wasting money. It's just transferring it.
Right.
Interesting.
That was the question that he asked. So I said that I didn't want to get too sidetracked, but I said the thought process of the Torah, when a person's giving money, to use for good purposes. The Torah is against the idea of just storing money for the purpose of money.
Pancakes in the attic, right.
But not in the pancakes. Russia gave us the money for a reason. So I'm supposed to steward the money and use it for good purposes. So I said, well, I can justify this frivolous purchase because the Maisa, somebody's making a lot of money on it. That's my business to make sure everybody has their money. That's not your business. Your business is the money I gave you to handle it in an intelligent way. That's your responsibility. And I'm obviously just continuing that thread. So over here, what he said. Over here, in a certain sense, over here, the responsibility is to transfer the money. This is the one place where the responsibility is. But that's not that's part of my way I use money, is I was given certain money to make sure that it's transferred to the people that they should have it. But then I'm not charging anything for that. That's part of their rights to have that. So I said that to them. I controlled myself. They did. There's a Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara says, the Pasuk says, the Kapitel Tillim that you say in the Beis Avel, right? The Pasuk says that, you know, the people are going to die, v'ozu l'cheirim chelim. They're going to leave over their efforts, their strength to other people. You know, the person works hard to develop capital, and he passes away and gives it, it's gone. It's not his anymore. So whatever he, quote unquote, took with him, used it for Torah mitzvahs, that's his. Whatever left behind, it was just wasted effort. Right? So he spent 15 years of his life developing all this money, which he didn't take with him.
Right.
He left it for somebody else. So the Mora says that Rish Lakish, when he was Nifter, he left over a kav of marikas. Marikas are a vegetable which is available, right, for free down by the Agam. The different Gemara, the Mora Yisrael, says, you know, there's a marikas by the Agam. Right? So Rish Lakish left over his total capital, right? He left over at the end of his life was a kav of marikas. But Karl Atzma, a posik, the Mora says, Vazu lecheir b'cheilam. He wasted it. He could have learned another 3 minutes of learning in his lifetime. And not because there was one kamarikas he didn't have using. So his gansa Yerusha for the Kindalach was a kamarikas, and he's upset that it was also the Kerem Chayla. So I once heard Rebbe Wein says, it says, this definitely does not fit into the modern mindset of portfolios. What?
Right, that's for sure.
Right? Is that we're here for a limited amount of time to do as best as we can with the resources that we have. So I comment this to I have a Talmud. Baruch Hashem is financially, more, as the saying goes, successful. Right? And he was telling me that there's a fellow there in the shul who is anti-foundations. He says, what's a foundation? The person has a large amount of money. He wants to protected against the taxes, etc. So he loses the foundation. And then over a period of the next who knows how many years, he gives it away.
Right.
He says, give it away now. Well, there's plenty of things, with plenty of needs right now. Now, yes, I understand that sometimes, you know, there's something which is, but it's just the idea, it says, partially, it says, the person said to him, he said, people do that because they want to maintain control over their items. It's the idea of, it's my money. And this fellow, he said that this fellow in the shul says, it's not my money. Russia gave me, and I reinvest in the business, whatever I reinvest in the business. Take from my family, whatever I take from my family. And the rest of the money I give away. It's not my money. The Russian gave it to me to do things with it. So the Russian didn't give me that. I should store it in a storehouse.
You have the guy's number?
But how do you respond if someone says, I make a lot of money and I know how to invest it, so whenever I give it away, I'll have more to give away in 10 years.
It's a good question. You know, what's a responsible usage of the research that Rishon gave you? It's a fair question. But it's a question which has to be asked. Right? There is the most people think, the third portion that I should invest everything. And then I give, you know, I give a tenth. Mehechatesi. Right? Right? I understand that the Gemara says that the Mavazal Yavazal Yisrael Mechamish, you're not supposed to get more than a fifth. Comes the Shidmet says that's only by an average person. By Asher Muflig, you're allowed to give more. Right? It's like, you know, I go to the billionaires and listen, you know, can't get more than a fifth, I'm sorry, you know. And I, what do you want from me? Like, you know, I should only live on 10 billion, like, you know, it's very rare, like, you know. Like, he's got money coming out of, you know, like out of his ears. Like, you know, do something with it. Okay. Now I got to keep a hold on the 4/5 of it. So the more said, that's not true. At some point in time, the appropriate thing is to find, look around, find ways that you can offer it to the world, better the world. The Russia gave it to you. Yes, it's not frivolous. It's just whatever, you know. But think it through, and find ways to do it. So and I'm fascinated that this young man looked there in the shul. He said that's his attitude. It was like a beautiful, you know, like I'm sure he's not just like throwing it out, right. You know. The first guy walks in, you know, like a Rekreski comes in, you know, or Maryland.
I could try.
What?
I could try.
Yeah, we'll go together. Let's. I got a Carlo to support also, you know. I'm sure he would give, you know, whatever he has available to give, you know. But money is a very challenging thing. Money is a very, very, our relationship to money is very, it's very sticky. Excuse the, you know, the, we, money gives a feeling of safety, gives a feeling of security, gives a feeling of power, right? And giving it away is clearly challenging, right? And, you know, you're losing all those things, that feeling of safety and security, the feeling of power, the feeling of worth, value, success, all of those things, we tie so much into the world of money. And it's really scary how powerful it is over us. So being machped on these things, that the availability of lending money in our society, not for ribbis, and, you know, significant amounts of money, is a very, very powerful way of reminding yourself that it's not, you know, that you're not the boss. It's not yours. It's responsibility to share with others. Obviously, the person has the money. You know, Chabas Chaim wrote in his Avos Chesed, he says everybody has a chiyuv to b'kayim this mitzvah. He says, "My, people can't do it." He says, "So these impoverished shtetlach." He says, "Everyone contribute a pruta a month. Make a chevron together. So it goes into the sukkah of Zeinu Yochel, Zeinu Yochel." The Mora says, if two people do an aver together, and either one is able to accomplish an aver by themselves, they're both chai for the aver, because each one is played in such an integral role in the aver that's called their aver. So he says, we can't create a gemach in the city unless everybody contributes their pruta. So it's zeinu yochel, zeinu yochel. So every person who contributes their pruta, it's kilo, the whole mitzvah is being done. I'll shame them. So he says, so everybody's able to do that. You know, you give a pruta a week, pruta a month. And over a period of time, a Karen will build up in the city. There'll be money available to make sure the people in the city have what to borrow from. And you know, like the Chabad Chaim has this way of looking at the things that are very practical.
Yeah, I hear.
Yeah. So, you know, a few years ago they started the, we have Mayana Castle, we have the Gemach over here. A few people put some money in, and they think they keep putting money in. And Baruch Hashem, it's constantly, it's being used. And now, Baruch Hashem, the Hebrew Free Loan Society is actually, you know, is made a little bit easier to get money for people, and take out some of the clauses over there, which, you know, talk about ribbis issues. Mm-hmm. You know, even it's free loan, but you know, there's assessment for being late, etc. Those which are not so simple, that halachically, those are not permitted halachically. Right. So we were able to have a meeting with them and, you know, change some of the language of it. So, but that was my financial contribution to the. I convinced them to change the language so to make all the money available.
You contribute services.
What?
You contribute services.
I contributed services.
At
billing at $500 an hour was a lot of money.
It's great these days.
I can make depending on rate of what, because nobody's paying it anyway. So at least in regards to values. You know. The more it says that the mice that Scarpetola I deserve. I mean, I could have went to Harvard and got a law degree, right?
There you go.
I chose not to. So, but the mice, that's why I can do this, you know. So it's a Scarpetola. Okay.